You are listening to Down Home.
In today's episode, me and Jay discuss the remarkable legacy of Canadian black sleeping car porters. These unsung heroes of the railway not only crisscrossed our nation's landscapes, but also forged pathways towards equality and justice for Canadian employees across Canada. In the early 20th century, the railway system was the lifeblood of Canada, connecting distant communities and driving the country's economic growth. Yet behind the facade of glamour and luxury lay the reality for black workers, denied access to meaningful and decent paying jobs. Many found themselves relegated to the most basic positions. Enter the sleeping car porters, a dedicated group of black Canadian men who, despite facing racism and discrimination, became pillars of resilience and activism. Their role was far more than just attending to passengers' needs. They were the backbone of the railway, ensuring safe and comfortable journeys for all passengers. But these porters were not content with merely serving silently. They organized and they demanded change. Their battle for recognition and respect within the Canadian Pacific Railway and the Canadian National Railway was nothing short of a fight for dignity. I'm Derek Wise, and on behalf of Jay Jones, welcome to Down Home, the Canadian experience from two black men. Breaking new ground, breaking new ground. We're going to talk about the black porters.
Yep.
That worked back in the day. It was Canadian National, CNR.
Yep.
But just so you guys know, this is our second attempt at this.
take two.
Take two, because we had some technical issues on the first go around. But it is still an interesting topic, no doubt.
Mm-hmm.
And it remains interesting, actually, like to find out. It was pretty much a North American-wide thing, too. It wasn't just because when I was growing up, because of the connection with the North End and the amount of black men in that neighborhood that worked for CN,
mm-hmm.
I thought it was almost strictly a Halifax thing, and they went from like Halifax to Toronto, to Montreal to Toronto, but that's not the case, huh?
Not at all. In fact, this goes back to basically the 1870s when George Pullman started his railway cars in the United States. And because the blacks, you know, were most of them were free men, they still didn't have any jobs. And so George Pullman himself, he wanted to model his train service after in the enslavement era, like in servitude. So he hired all black porters. Some of them came from the Caribbean. Some of them came as far as Wales and some Dutch, and obviously Canada and the United States. And I think by 1920, he was the largest employer in the United States as far as sleeper cars go. And then that mm-hmm. same model itself expanded to Canada.
In the early 19th century, a time when long-distance train travel was uncomfortable and oftentimes impractical, passengers would endure cramped seating, noisy carriages, and the challenge of trying to sleep while sitting upright. It was during this time of comfortless train travel that the concept of the sleeping car emerged, a revolutionary idea that would change the course of railway history. The first inklings of this innovation can be traced back to the 1830s in the UK, when engineers and inventors began to toy with the idea of providing overnight accommodations on trains. The early sleeping cars were very simple, basic compartments, often resembling more of a makeshift bunkhouse than a comfortable hotel room. But for weary travelers on a long journey, they offered a welcome experience, a chance to recline, rest, and even catch a few hours of sleep. As the popularity of train travel grew, so did the demands for more sophisticated sleeping accommodations. Railway companies began to invest in the development of luxurious sleeping cars, complete with plush beds, private compartments, and even dining facilities. By the late 19th century, sleeping cars had become an integral part of the railway experience. Passengers could now embark on multi-day journeys with the assurance of a comfortable place to rest their heads each night. So it was like full service. So these people basically waited on their guests hand and foot. So
yeah, 24/7. We're talking 7.
Yeah, 24, like there wasn't any off time.
Nope.
Anything that the guests needed was provided to them, no matter what. So things like while the guests slept, the porters would actually launder their clothes or mm-hmm. press their clothes. Or if the guest had too much to drink, the porters would nurse them to health.
Mm-hmm.
And it was literally a 24-hour job. So that because of that, the porters were actually called sleepy car porters.
Yes, yeah.
Sleepy car porters, because these guys would get like maybe three and a half hours sleep during a 24-hour shift.
Mm-hmm. And right. It was usually in weird quarters, like they could get all the sleep, or they would have to get their sleep in the smoking car. So you know what I mean? It wasn't like they didn't always have the best places to even rest their head for a minute, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I just found that interesting, and and that leads to, even though it was a very prestigious job and a lot of these black men were well educated, they could read and they did their job very, very well. Unfortunately, they still dealt with the same sort of issues of racism, for one being black, and you know, they couldn't sort of apply for a higher level job. The conductors were mainly white, and there was so much mistreatment along the way that they actually, it was ingenious in the way, because it actually started one of the first unions, all black unions and everything like that, or to create a union for the porters.
In 1925, in the city of Montreal, black Canadian porters came together to form the Brotherhood of Sleeping Car Porters, the BSCP, a groundbreaking union and the first of its kind for any black employees Canada-wide. Through the 1920s and 1930s, they stood up against racial discrimination, negotiating with the railway companies for fair wages and decent working conditions. In the lead of this organizational effort was Stanley G. Grizzle, an important figure in the effort to improve working conditions in Canadian history. Born in Toronto in 1918, Grizzle began his career as a sleeping car porter with CPR at the age of 22. Not content with the status quo, he wanted better working conditions for himself and his fellow workers. The BSCP faced resistance from the railway companies, as well as hostility from some of their white colleagues. But undeterred, the organization remained resolute. In the 1940s, their efforts finally bear fruit. The BSCP secures significant victories, including wage increases and the establishment of a standard work week for sleeping car porters. Their achievements reverberated throughout Canada, providing hope to all employees and a roadmap on how to achieve an equitable workplace. The huge thing with that was not only was the union of benefit just to the black employees, like a lot of the working conditions that they fought for actually benefited their white counterparts as well.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So this union, and the thing is, though, you know, once you unionize on that level, they became quite powerful in a way.
Yeah.
Because what are you going to do? You can't really bring people in to replace them, because a lot of people would not want to do the work that they were doing.
Yeah. And for the little pay and everything like that. Yeah. So they use it as a point of power.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, exactly.
And the other interesting thing too, it it created a lot of Black communities throughout Canada. Africville being one. Some porters were from Africville. Little Burgundy in Montreal. In Toronto, it was Bathurst and Bloor area. And there was a station out west near Hogan's Valley, which was a main place where the train station was. So a Black community was formed there, so these Black men could apply to get jobs. Mm-hmm. And like I said, it was, if you were doing this job, you were considered to be sort of, you know, very prestigious and just it was considered a very good job.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Like we read about their working conditions and how things went, and we apply like today's lens on what was going on back then.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes down to that, it was a good job for a Black man. You know, you weren't in a coal mine, you weren't doing anything of that nature. It was an actual good job. And even though they weren't paid greatly, mm-hmm. it was a better paycheck than a lot of places that they were working at, you know?
For sure. And even though they were tired and had certain conditions, a lot of the men took pride in what they did. And, you know, I'm sure it wasn't always easy, but, you know, it shows how much they cared to do what they could do and to provide for their family. At the end of the day, that's really what it was all about. And, you know, and it was a long line of Black men who did it. And some interesting tidbits were Thurgood Marshall. He had a family member that worked as a porter and stuff like that. So, mm-hmm. you know, you had this, you know, growing up in the times, it was just, you know, it was one stop along the track for us to be who we are in the end, you know, but we had mm-hmm. to start somewhere. And it was a good model.
Jerry Archambault's poignant reflections, published in the Black Ottawa Scene about 6 years ago, capture the essence of a profession that was more than just a job. It was a source of honor, dignity, and opportunity. Archambault writes, "The job paid a good salary, gave job security if you obeyed the rules, and it had a pension plan." From Jerry's perspective, these were not just empty promises. There were tangible benefits that provided stability and security for the families of the Black porters. But perhaps what truly set the role of the Black porters apart was the opportunity for excellence. Archambault writes, "The thing that most former porters will not tell you is how very well a porter could do by giving good service to his passengers, who usually tipped very well. Imagine the pride of a porter as he ensures the comfort and satisfaction of each passenger, going above and beyond to provide a memorable journey. The tips received were not just tokens of gratitude, they were symbols of respect for a job well done." Archambault reminds us, as he wrote, "Black Canadians should be proud of their relatives who worked the railway, who made a living so their children could be educated today." His words are a reminder that these men labored tirelessly, not for themselves alone, but for the generations to come. Instead of viewing their work as low or menial, Archambault encourages a shift in perspective. He urges us to see these railway men as heroes of their time, individuals who contributed to the building of a more just and equitable Canadian society. These Black porters were more than just employees, they were ambassadors of dignity and service. Archambault beautifully expressed this sentiment by saying, "They served with dignity."
Yeah. And it's kind of an interesting story that doesn't get well known, but there's been a renaissance for some of these stories that people don't know, specifically the porters. There's a TV show on CBC. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I'm sure that shows a little bit of an example of what it was like.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and it was a long lasting like line of porter. Like, I remember me and you took a train ride to from Halifax to Toronto back in like 90, 92, maybe 93.
Yeah.
And we ran into older gentleman from our from the black community in Toronto. Do you remember who that was?
Thornton Williams.
It was Thornton Williams?
Yeah.
Yeah, and like he had worked the trains for decades at that point.
Yeah. And he was also a deacon at Cornwall Street.
At the Cornwall Street Baptist Church, exactly, man.
Yeah.
So it's something that and I'm sure, I don't know, man, like who knows if it's a thing today? I don't think it's a thing today.
No,
to be honest, man. But he might have been probably one of the last remaining vestiges of that era.
Mm-hmm.
But it was in the 90s.
Yeah, man. It was. I remember it very vividly because I used to take the train all through my days of youth up until about 12 or 13. I used to go to Montreal every summer by train, and I always saw Mr. Williams sometimes, and it was just kind of a lot. I didn't even think about it at the time, you know. Mm.
And well, the way the history, like we were talking about this before, that oftentimes our history was assumed even within our community back in Halifax, right?
Yeah.
The history's assumed. It's not really passed along.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know what I mean?
And it's very interesting. It's very interesting.
Mm.
And I think sometimes even our elders, I think they shielded us away from that, right? And of course, we're kids, so we didn't even really have the concept until we started experiencing it ourselves in social circles. Even though, you know, sometimes experienced it young. You didn't quite know what it meant, but the elders were also good at that too, hiding and sheltering us and keeping us shielded from what was going on until, of course, we got a little bit older and have conversations. I always found it cool that, you know, to hear you one day say, yeah, I had to sit down with my kids and have this conversation about what kind of goes on in the world and just told them to be prepared. Yeah. But yeah, they didn't do that for us.
No. But anyway, the porters.
Yeah, man, the porters.
Interesting story, man.
Yep. Breaking new ground, breaking new ground. Breaking new ground,
sip a breaking new ground, breaking new ground. You have been listening to Down Home. Subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Breaking new ground, sip a breaking new ground, breaking new ground. On a high plateau, from the one down below to the future of the funk, getting lost in the flow. Contact with the spot, my gex. Now it's time to flex with the force from the soul, reaching all aspects, getting deep, no time to sleep as you reach your next phase, laying it all on the line. New trail start to blaze, it's a fire inside, a brand new path, breaking down the sum to one, feeling free. I just laugh with the joy of the song. Breaking new ground from the breakdown. Like magic prescribed, only to seal a perfect blend, like a diamond in the rough, ready to drop a perfect gem. It's time to shine so fine to see what you find. Revolution.